Fernando Kyoka, Rothbardianism at Rothbard's Centenary. Rothbard at 100, Portugal. June 27, 2026. Thank you, Manuel, for the invitation and for making this event happen. The Communist Manifesto was published on February 21, 1848. 69 years later, the Marxist Bolsheviks, most of whom weren't even truly Russian, 85% of them were Jewish, would seize power in Russia through a coup d'état. The Marxist movement gained power over 7 decades. The abolitionist movement took shape in the United Kingdom among Christian religious groups. The Quakers were the main founders of the society to effect the abolition of the slave trade. In 1787, 20 years later, in 1807, they succeeded in ending the British slave trade. And in 1833, 46 years after the founding of this abolitionist society, the end of slavery throughout the British Empire would be achieved. In 2014, Stefan Kinsella gave a lecture titled Libertarianism After 50 Years, What Have We Learned? Where he estimated that the libertarian movement began 50 to 60 years earlier. So today, in 2026, on Rothbard's centenary, the libertarian movement would be between 60 and 70 years old. And before that, 80 years ago, Leonard Reed founded the Foundation for Economic Education. It goes without saying that, compared to the other two movements mentioned, the libertarian movement, in terms of practical results, has failed. British abolitionists wanted the abolition of slavery and, within a few decades, succeeded in having slavery abolished throughout the British Empire. The libertarian movement, formed by minarchists and anarcho-capitalists, advocated for a minimal state, or the abolition of the state. Therefore, if it had had the same success as the anti-slavery movement, the large state, outside of its functions of protection and justice, would have already been abolished at least throughout the American Empire, which is where the libertarian movement originated. Compare the founding of the abolitionist society, which 46 years later abolished slavery in the empire, and the founding of the FEE, Foundation for Economic Education, in 1946, 80 years ago. The American empire is even further behind than before the minarchism they advocated. It has only gone backward. The state has only grown. We've reached 6 or 7 decades of the movement, and 100 years since Rothbard, without many practical results to show for it. We only have a false libertarian who became president of a country in South America, and did nothing to end or diminish the state. On the contrary, he increased the state. I'll give details about this later. I think only the most naive libertarians want to change the world, because the rest of us just want to be left in peace, in our corner. That's why secession is our main political banner. But we haven't yet achieved a free society anywhere on the planet. And we didn't even need a large country, since there aren't many millions of libertarians in the world. Most people reject the product we're offering. They don't want freedom. They want a leader. They want security, stability. They want to be bossed around. They prefer to remain slaves. Or whatever it is they want. So, just a small territory would be good to start with. We have many libertarian projects, such as seasteading, free cities, and the Free State Project in New Hampshire. And among these projects, there is a promising attempt underway on a small river island between Croatia and Serbia, Libeland. Libeland has counted on the collaboration of 3 of the greatest Rothbardian Austro-libertarians in the world today, who are present here today: Kinsella, Alessandro Fasillo, and Hopper. These 3, on December 19th of last year, were at a Libeland event where they lectured and discussed its constitution. If this project becomes viable, taking into account the advice of these 3 masters, we will have something practical of value to show in the future. But that's not what's happening now. If he were alive, Rothbard would celebrate his 100th birthday, seeing the libertarian movement far behind the abolitionist and communist movements in achieving its goals. And that's not all. He will also witness on his birthday a major crisis within Rothbardianism, with institutions and individuals betraying his legacy. But of course, he certainly had much to celebrate. His ideas have grown enormously in popularity, with people and institutions doing justice to his legacy, the main ones gathered here today in this celebration. So, I want to talk about who the true and false Rothbardians are, and for that, we need to understand what it means to be a Rothbardian. Rothbard was an Austrian economist, but being an Austrian economist doesn't mean being a Rothbardian. In economics, Rothbard was a Misesian. Therefore, to be a Rothbardian, one must be a Misesian, that is, understand economic science as a branch of praxeology. Economics is an axiomatic, logical-deductive science. This means that its propositions have the same status as the axioms from which they are derived, that is, they are irrefutable. This is, for example, quite different from being a Hayekian. Hayek was a Wieserian influenced by Popper who disregarded praxeology. Rothbard was the foremost and greatest economist after Mises. But Rothbard was not just an economist. Therefore, being merely a praxeologist does not mean being a Rothbardian. Rothbard was a polymath, with profound knowledge in various sciences, but Rothbardianism is characterized by Rothbardian ethics, and the implications of this ethics in his political philosophy. In this respect, Rothbard departs from Mises. Rothbard is not a Misesian in ethics and political philosophy, only in economics. So, being a complete Misesian is different from being a complete Rothbardian. And when I say complete or true, it's good to clarify that being a Rothbardian doesn't mean agreeing with everything Rothbard said about everything. We are not part of a cult. True or complete, Rothbardians disagree with Rothbard on some points. For example, Kinsella disagreed with Rothbard on some approaches to intellectual property. He corrected and developed them, using the Rothbardian framework, and we can say that Rothbardians today are Kinsellians on intellectual property. Another example, Popper disagreed with Rothbard on his positive view of democracy as an evolution, and we can also say that Rothbardians today are Hoppians regarding democracy. Another point. Most Rothbardians disagree with Rothbard's position on abortion, but that doesn't make them any less Rothbardians. But there are issues on which it is impossible to disagree with Rothbard and remain a Rothbardian, as they are contrary to the Rothbardian essence. Therefore, Mises is not a Rothbardian, and Rothbard is not a Misesian, because Mises was not an anarcho-capitalist. Mises, like all liberals, was a walking contradiction. The contradiction of Mises that Rothbard freed himself from, and freed us from, was that of attacking monopolies but at the same time defending monopolies. Mises concluded that monopolies are bad. That everything provided through monopolies is more expensive and of lower quality than it would be if provided by the free market environment. But he defended the monopolistic provision of justice and security services by the state. Rothbard, like Gustave de Molinari before him, overcame this contradiction and defended the private production of security and justice. So, we can say that the complete Rothbardian is an anarcho-capitalist praxeologist, but Rothbard was not only that, and being a true Rothbardian requires more than that. To be a Rothbardian means to have a passion for justice. But passion and hatred go hand in hand. So it is also necessary to hate injustice. Rothbard made this clear in his article Do You Hate the State? There he compares himself to another anarcho-capitalist, David Friedman. Friedman makes a cold analysis and concludes that a stateless society would be superior to one with a state. Not that the state is particularly bad. Just that there is a better alternative. He doesn't hate the most criminal and murderous institution in history. He shows no feeling towards the endless list of injustices perpetrated by it. At this point, Rothbard says he prefers minarchists, who demonstrate a hatred of the state, to indifferent anarcho-capitalists. To be considered a true Rothbardian, one must hate the state and want to end it as quickly as possible. In his book The Ethics of Liberty, Rothbard wrote, "The libertarian must possess a passion for justice, an emotion originating from and channeled by his rational perception that natural justice demands. Justice, and not weak discourses dictated by mere utility, must be the driving force to achieve freedom. And, this means that the libertarian must be an abolitionist, i.e., he must desire to achieve the goal of freedom as quickly as possible. He should be an abolitionist who, if he could, would instantly abolish all invasions of freedom." Rothbard also believed that libertarianism alone would not be sufficient to achieve and maintain a free society, and he considered cultural conservatism to be a sociological presupposition of libertarianism. Furthermore, another fundamental characteristic of a Rothbardian is historical revisionism. In the talk Maturing with Murray, Hopper recounts that one of the two main lessons he learned in the 10 years he spent daily with Rothbard was to be a revisionist. He said, "In our numerous conversations, I learned from Murray the importance of complementing Austro-libertarian theory with revisionist history in order to present a truly realistic assessment of historical events and global affairs. Above all, it was Murray who taught me never to trust official history, invariably written by the victors, but to conduct all historical research like a detective investigating a crime, so to speak. And lastly, but no less importantly, a Rothbardian must be anti-war. Opposition to war was the fundamental piece in the formation of Rothbard's philosophy, which began in the American Old Right. The American Old Right was a group that united against the New Deal, and against the U.S. entry into World War II. The issue of war was so important to Rothbard that he, later in life, even attempted an alliance with the left, solely because of their opposition to the Vietnam War. But above all, Rothbard's opposition to war stemmed from his opposition to aggression. And war is the ultimate aggression. It involves increased state interference in the economy and large-scale murder and destruction of property. So, to recap, the complete and true Rothbardian must be 1. Misesian praxeologist. 2. Anarcho-capitalist. 3. Abolitionist who hates the state. 4. Cultural conservative. 5. Historical revisionist, and 6. Anti-war. So, what do we have of true and false Rothbardianism today, on the centenary of Rothbard's birth? First, let's talk about the first president elected in history who calls himself a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist, Javier Milei. Milei is not a praxeologist. His economic discourse is heavily based on statistics, and he does not reject the positivist economic schools which, epistemologically, are diametrically opposed. Opposed to the Austrian school. Millet's intellectual confusion could already be seen in the names he gave to his four clone dogs, Murray, Milton, Robert, and Lucas. He mixed positivists with Austrians, which are actually incompatible. And a guy who considers Ben Bernanke one of the best economists in history and says he saved the world can never be considered an Austrian. Millet is clearly not an abolitionist, since he received the mandate from the ballot box to abolish the main source of money and power of the state, the central bank, and he did not do so. On the contrary, he saved Argentina's central bank. Millet is not a historical revisionist. On the contrary, he swallows all mainstream history to the point of considering the villain Churchill as his great hero. And worst of all, Millet is not anti-war, quite the contrary. While Rothbard identified only two just wars in history, the secession of the 13 American colonies and the attempted secession of the South, Millet considers all wars of the American Empire just. He most vehemently supported the U.S. proxy war against Russia in Ukraine, the U.S.-sponsored Israeli genocide in Gaza, and the current U.S.-Israeli war against Iran. Millet is the archetype of the false Rothbardian. And although many Americans don't pay him any attention, denouncing the fraud that is Millet is one of the most important missions in this Rothbard centenary period. That's why one of the greatest champions of Rothbardianism today is a Paraguayan musician named Oscar Grau, who has dedicated much of his energy to combating not only the Millet farce but also its apologists within the Austro-Libertarian movement, such as Philip Bagus and Jesus Huerta de Soto. And besides these two propagandists, there are others who may not be considered Millet followers, but whose positions regarding Millet and his propagandists reveal their true priorities. Millet is currently at the center of an institutional crisis that is shaking Rothbardianism in the centenary of Rothbard's birth. In recent years, we've had three issues that served as Rothbardian tests for individuals and institutions: COVID, Ukraine, and Israel. Most passed the first test. When the globalist alarmism surrounding the COVID pandemic began, virtually all Rothbardians and libertarian institutions raised their voices to oppose this tyranny being imposed on humanity. LouRockwell.com, Mises Institute, Ron Paul Institute, Libertarian Institute, Future of Freedom Foundation, American Institute for Economic Research, FEE. Only institutions we already knew weren't libertarian remained silent or sided with the tyranny. Such as Reason and Mises Brazil, which advocated for staying home, vaccines, and even sold masks. The mask issue is interesting because, for me, it was the first sign that something was very wrong with Millet. At the time, I followed Millet's social media, and he was campaigning for Congress. Campaigning in the streets, outdoors, he appeared wearing a mask all the time. The thing is, almost no one around him was wearing a mask. So it wasn't even an obligation. He truly believed in it. An absolutely ridiculous measure that anyone could discover in 5 minutes of research is 1,000 times larger than the virus. But there he was, every day displaying this symbol of the fear induced by the COVID dictatorship. I couldn't stand it and I stopped following him. I unfollowed him. Then I ended up letting it go. Saying, okay, he's not a true libertarian. But he's someone who's out there saying that taxes are theft and that he's going to abolish the central bank, etc. But Millet was never in favor of mandatory masks, nor mandatory vaccination. He was against lockdowns, published a book defending individual liberties during the pandemic. So I'd say he passed that test. Not with merit. He also said a lot of nonsense. The war in Ukraine was another test that most libertarians passed, and in this one, Millet failed. In Brazil, there was one of the few who also failed, a YouTuber who calls himself an ANCAP, and who, because of his popularity, diverted many potential Rothbardians away from Rothbardianism. And the third test, Israel, Millet failed spectacularly. And although most libertarians passed, this test also failed one of the, until then, greatest libertarians in the world, Walter Block. Block was considered by many to be among the three greatest Rothbardians, alongside Lou Rockwell and Hopper, and he passed the first two tests with merit. But his perverse position in favor of Israel and its wars revealed that he is neither a Rothbardian nor even a libertarian. It showed that he never ceased to be a collectivist, genocidal Randian. Of course, defending Israel's monstrosity in Gaza is absolutely incompatible with Rothbardianism, but institutions and people who did not oppose or simply remained silent in the face of the Gaza genocide also simply cannot be considered Rothbardian. But what about those who do not oppose those who actively defend Israel's atrocities? Like Block and Millet, how does this affect the degree of Rothbardianism? This brings us to the main institutional crisis in Rothbard's centenary year. A crisis within the institute he founded and served as academic director until his death, and which was the cornerstone of Rothbardianism worldwide, the Mises Institute. By becoming a propagandist for Millet, Jesus Huerta de Soto not only betrayed Rothbardianism, but also his Catholicism, by supporting an agent of Chabad Lubavitch, a Jewish sect that hates Christ. Judaism itself is already a cult based on hatred of Jesus. Chabad is even worse. But the institutional crisis in question came to light when this apologist for Millet was invited to speak at this year's Austrian Scholars Conference. Following this invitation, Hoppe published the commemorative book for Rothbard's centenary, with a highly critical introduction to Millet. Apparently, so as not to displease the guest of honor at his conference, the Mises Institute refused to publicize the book and publish the introduction. Then Huerta de Soto gave his lecture, in which he called Millet the greatest Austro-libertarian hero of all time, and was applauded. The funny thing is that he considers Millet a hero for something that is actually the greatest tragedy of the Millet phenomenon, which is that he drew the attention of a huge audience to Austro-libertarian ideas. But this is terrible, because now this audience associates libertarianism and the Austrian school with Zionism, inflationism, wars, censorship, genocide, and all the other imbecility that Millet has been defending and practicing. The Austrian school is having its reputation tarnished by this fraud. And perhaps we have already lost the term libertarianism forever. Perhaps we need a new name. After that, Hoppe published an article, Mises the Book Quo Vadis. By the Institute revealed what was behind the entire institutional crisis that culminated in this dark moment for Rothbardianism. It exposed a scheme of incentives and conflicts of interest within the institution, involving more than $70 million. This explained much of why the Institute abandoned Rothbardianism and embraced the apologists of a monumental fraud. Where is it going? Was the question. And the Mises Institute has already gone. Where to? Away from Rothbardianism. He expelled Hoppe and remained with Millet's apologists. He distanced himself from intransigent radicalism and has promoted liberals and Hayekians. He still has good collaborators and good content, but he is no longer a reliable source for Rothbardians. Now it is necessary to filter this content to avoid consuming impurities. Or poisons? The position of reliable source is being filled by the property blog and journal. And at the Rothbard Institute, we try to be faithful to Rothbard's legacy, giving exclusivity to praxeology and anarcho-capitalism, publishing a lot of revisionist and culturally conservative content. And we are always fighting against war. It's one of the most frequent themes there. Well, we'll soon have Hoppe's first lecture since the eruption of this crisis and his break with the Mises Institute, and we may get a glimpse of the current state and future of Rothbardianism in the world. Hoppe is not only Rothbard's main intellectual heir, but he has also assumed the role of beacon of Austro-libertarianism. Rothbardian. All of this makes this Mises Portugal event a historic event of utmost importance, and I thank you once again for the opportunity to be here. Thank you.